Becky Lomax is an author, editor, and writing coach. Thanks for speaking with Katie and Kay.
Thank you for having me. It's great.
Becky has been writing moon travel guide books, reporting for magazines like Smithsonian and Backpacker, as well as newspapers across the West for more than two decades. Her writing is informed by a background in guiding backpacking and working at ski resorts, even peeling carrots in the kitchen at Glacier Park Lodge back in college. Her new book for Moon is quite a marvelous accomplishment. USA National Parks, The Complete Guide to All 59 Parks. Congratulations on your latest achievement, Becky, and the recognition you've been getting the past several months for your fine work. Tell us where you are right now. Where am I reaching you?
Where I am. It is absolutely gorgeous. I am standing in the middle of Yosemite Valley in a meadow called Cook's Meadow, and I'm staring up at Yosemite Falls, both the upper falls and the lower falls. And this is high runoff season, so there is just volumes of water pouring out of this waterfall. It's and it's huge, and it's so tall. It's amazing.
Well, I'm really glad we have cell reception because I had the chance to get this interview in this week for an opening on the schedule. But tell us about what is it about getting away from technology and concrete and out into nature that is so important for the working man or working woman?
You know, I think it's just so important to connect with the outdoors. And, you know, I call it brain laundry
right.
for me. You know, to be out here, I don't know if you can hear them, but I'm listening to some red-winged blackbirds and the wind and the falls all in one shot. And just to have this soundscape that is not dominated by television or cars, traffic, or people blaring horns, things like that, it's just, it's more of a natural soundscape, and it's lovely. And plus, of course, the landscape is natural, too. So it's just restorative when you get out and experience it.
For sure. Well, looking at your new book, USA National Parks, The Complete Guide to All 59 Parks, I was pleased to see that the national park closest to our broadcast area for Katie and Kay, the Black Canyon of the Gunnison, is among your picks for the very best locations to find solitude. What is the significance of Black Canyon's designation as a dark sky park?
Well, it's one of many that are dark sky parks now. And that's it's been kind of a movement amongst many of the national parks to get recognized by the International Dark Sky Society and start running dark sky programs. So what this means is they're recognizing the fact that so many of their visitors are coming from cities where you look up and you barely see the stars in the sky because there's so much light pollution.
Mm-hmm.
And in the parks, they don't have that light pollution. So they're working on adding these incredible programs where you go out with rangers at night and they give you tours of the night sky. Sometimes they have giant telescopes you get to look through and see the rings of Saturn. And it's a way of experiencing something that so many people don't get to experience anymore because of the light pollution around where they live.
Yeah, it's wild to think that some people have never even seen the Milky Way.
Yeah, but that's what getting out into the national parks, many of them will do. And Black Canyon is, of course, one of those parks that, because it doesn't have lights around it, you get just incredible views of the stars and the Milky Way.
Becky Lomax, your writing evokes strong pride in the country's national parks and the appreciation of these beautiful outdoor places. What did it mean to you way back when, growing up with a parent who served as a park ranger?
Well, my dad worked in Mount Rainier before I was born. And so what that meant was that as we were growing up as kids, that's what we did. We went back to the park and visited, camped, and hiked. And Mount Rainier became our family favorite because it was so important to my dad. And it just was one of those places that kind of we all had a really deep connection to.
And in addition to your writing, you're a skilled photographer for your new book, USA National Parks. You left photography to others. They're beautiful, of course, but that must have allowed you to focus on connecting the dots. This is such a significant subject. You've broken up the country into sections. Is that partly to just help tourists plan road trips?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Because so many of the places that you want to go are, connecting parks that are really close to each other. And so beginnings of those region sections give explanations about how to do that and, how long it would take to put a road trip together, say through the Southwest parks or through the Alaska parks, and which parks you can actually link up. Because just because parks are close doesn't mean you can actually link them up in a road trip. One example is, here I'm standing in Yosemite during waterfall season, and the pass, Tioga Pass, that goes over and down and goes to Death Valley isn't open yet. So you can't connect those. And when it does open in summer, then Death Valley is, super hot.
Right.
So those two you don't really want to connect in a road trip. You can do it because they're nearby, but they're more like opposite seasons for visiting.
Too often when we think of national parks, we think of long lines or crowded trails at the Grand Canyon or Yosemite. Here in the West, what are some of your favorite underrated destinations? Now, I know you're on the trail right now and don't have your book in front of you to cheat with.
Yeah. Underrated destinations. Boy, there's so many. And one of them I would put, I just went there last spring and it blew me away. It was Theodore Roosevelt National Park up in North Dakota.
Wow.
Yeah, it's way out in the middle of nowhere. And I thought, okay, it's got some badlands. It'll be some pretty landscape. And I think they have a few bison. Well, talk about wildlife watching. It was absolutely incredible. We had bison walking through our campsite, eagles flying overhead, prairie dogs right down the road in a huge village, and coyotes coming in to hunt the prairie dogs, and then wild horses running through. So it was just like we sat there and we're watching this, wildlife show happen. And that's one place I recommend going. Like, if you want to see a ton of wildlife, go there. Yellowstone's great for wildlife, and it's probably one of the top places in the country, but it's also super crowded.
Mm-hmm.
And Theodore Roosevelt isn't, so that's way cool.
Well, I want to ask you about another one that one of my coworkers, Luke, wanted me to hit you up for. You have just a few pages on this. And of course, one of the things about a book with 59 national parks in it is some of the parks don't get as many pages as an expert might want to see. But he said
right.
His favorite is Great Basin National Park, which is technically in Nevada. And he said,
yes.
As far as he knows, it's the least visited. I don't know if that's an accurate statement, but it's got to be one of the least. But he said that's another one he thinks of as underrated.
Absolutely. I've been there and it's like it doesn't have crowds, but it's got so much variety to see. You've got the Layman Caves that you can do tours through, and anytime you can get in a cave, it's just a whole different world. And then you can go up Wheeler Peak and, the views go on for miles there. And I mean, just not, you're not fighting the crowd. It isn't the least visited national park. Those are in Alaska. There's two of them up there, Kodiak Valley and Gates of the Arctic, that are
harder to get to.
Oh, totally hard. you have to get way up there, and then you have to fly into the parks and just get dropped off.
Well, and some people are surprised by the most visited park in the country.
Great Smokies. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah, it's partially because I think the, number of people and larger cities that are around the area, so it's pretty easy to get to. And it also is one of the parks, especially like, in Colorado and where I live in Montana, outside Glacier, in some of the mountain parks, it's a little hard to get into those in winter. You have to be a little bit more self-sufficient, and some of the roads close, and maybe you have to be a skier to get in there. And Great Smokies, you can pretty much get in year-round.
My guest is Becky Lomax, author of USA National Parks, The Complete Guide to All 59 Parks. We can't all live in moose and bear country like you do near Glacier National Park. Isn't your hometown park at risk from the warming climate now?
Glacier Park? Yes. Our glaciers have been shrinking and melting, and now we're down where we had 150 glaciers in 1850, we're down to way under 25 at this point. And in my lifetime, as I've been hiking, you know, every couple years back to several of these glaciers to kind of see what's been going on, I've been watching them change. And it's been so dramatic recently in the last decade that every time I go up there, I can see their perimeter has shrunk from the last time I saw it.
Wow.
And now what used to be a big kind of swale of ice, many of them are just kind of flattening down like thin pancakes. And so to watch that, it's just very, very evident that they're going, and they're going fast. And, you know, some may linger longer than predicted because they might be a little bit protected under a north side peak, but they're, you know, going to be shrinking small, so they aren't really viable glaciers at some point here.
I mean, you've been witnessing this with your own eyes, so it's
absolutely
clear to you.
Absolutely.
In the publishing world, is it frowned upon to be a conservation advocate in this space because you want people, no matter their beliefs, to buy your book? Or is that something that, can you be outspoken on conservation if you so choose?
I can be, yeah. I just think, you know, particularly on the climate change issue, it is so complex. There is not one solution that we can say we have to do this one thing and it'll deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so complex, and it is so worldwide, because what happens in one area of the country actually affects the other area of the country. For instance, one of the things they've found in the glaciers of Glacier National Park has been chemicals that are from Asia.
Oh, wow. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, that stuff transports on the jet streams and so forth. And so it's not a simple answer. And I know that. But it would be lovely if, you know, we could start taking some steps towards dealing with the issue.
Well, in addition to climate impacts, talk about the political or managerial threats to our beloved national parks. I mean, again, I'm not asking you to be an activist here, but you just know so much that I'm curious. You know, there's questions around in the long term of the Park Service, the lack of diversity in the staff, or pursuit of a more diverse group of attendees. Certainly, tourists come from other countries, but within the United States, there aren't the visitors to national parks are not historically as diverse as our population.
Correct. And they don't reflect our population diversity either. So, I think the parks are just starting to work towards addressing some of those issues and trying to figure out, well, why not? You know, why aren't some people, why is it they don't want to go to the parks, and what makes them feel unwelcome there? And doing things to try and address that, which is great. And trying to figure out, okay, when they go to a park, what is it they want? And can we provide that? And those are beautiful questions to get started. So I think that's a perfect thing for the Park Service to look at. The other issue, kind of a flip side of all of that, is the funding of the parks and the underfunding of all of them have tremendous maintenance backlogs.
Yeah.
That, you know, deteriorating roads, campgrounds that are kind of need updated facilities and so forth. And that costs money, and the parks don't. Many of the parks don't have the money to do that, or the Park Service as a whole doesn't have enough to fix it all. So there's some concerns in terms of the survivability of the parks and being able to last into the future. I mean, they're gifts to the children, too, and generations to come. And we need to do a little bit more with protecting them and supporting them and making them open and welcoming for everybody.
That's Becky Lomax, author of USA National Parks, The Complete Guide to All 59 Parks, out now on Moon. And really excited to talk to you, Becky. One of the things that a great hero of mine, Rick Steves, has always done is he's helped people travel on a budget. It's not the only thing he does, but it's something I've always respected about his work, is that he doesn't want you to think travel is only for the wealthy. Do you feel like in this day and age, given the underfunding and, you know, the rising costs of fees and things, can adventurers have national park experiences without spending big? I mean, you need to have time off, sure.
Yes. Yeah, and you need to be able to at least get to the park. So that's part of it. But once you're in a national park, my favorite way to travel and experience it is, one, to camp. So that's pretty inexpensive. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at tent camping or backpacking. And my favorite thing to do is hiking, and it doesn't cost anything to hike. You know, it just, all it costs me is, you know, my peanut butter sandwich and
a pair of comfortable shoes, hopefully.
Yes. And when I wear out a pair, I have to get a new one. But yeah, it's just, that's the most inexpensive way to enjoy the parks. And I think it's the best way.
Well, and it's one of the things that you include throughout your book. In every section, you can get tips on the camping option or the hiking options, not just what's the fancy lodge. Although you obviously have some great information about the lodges, too. I mean, you know, there's some striking places at Mount Rainier and Crater Lake and these other locations. So it's nice to have that. But you know, we can't all afford those. In terms of, you know, kind of that personal level and how you feel about other people experiencing the parks, every time someone posing for a selfie falls off a cliff, tragically, or a lost hiker needs a rescue operation to survive, you must recoil. What's your message to risk seekers?
Risk seekers. Oh, well, for one, I think that risk seekers come in two categories there. I think a lot of the selfie accidents are accidents, you know, where people just... getting the picture is more important than being safe doing it. And when people, they don't often understand the environment they're in, that the cliffs are unforgiving when you get to the edge.
Mm-hmm.
If you slip, water is unforgiving if you fall in. And it's those are things you really have to be conscientious about when you're out doing things outdoors. And so I think, you know, learning a little bit more about the environment you're going to be spending your time in is important, and then implementing some safety measures so you don't end up being the person that's getting that, you know, gets gored by the bison because you're trying to get too close and get a selfie of you and the bison together.
Well, and I found your section in the back of your book, USA National Parks, called Essentials, is very essential. I mean, that's a key chapter. I mean, you have safety tips for wildlife. You talk about dehydration and hypothermia, and then things like giardia or even just poison oak that can make maybe wouldn't kill you, but could make your trip unpleasant.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And those are all environmental things that many people are unaware of, you know, and I think one of the biggest there is, besides the wildlife and giving wildlife its space, I think one of the biggest personal ones is hydration. Many people go to the mountain parks and they don't realize, you know, they get a headache, they're not sleeping, they're feeling miserable. They don't realize it's dehydration they're dealing with there.
Right. They fly into Denver, go to the hotel, go to a brewery, drink a couple of beers, and the next day on their hike in the national park, they're so dehydrated.
Yes, yes, exactly. And so, you know, people are more conscientious about their hydration. You'll have a much happier trip. You know, always traveling with water. Take reusable water bottles. You can constantly be filling them up. We don't want to add more single-use plastics to the Park Service recycling system and making them deal with it. So mm-hmm. if we've got those reusable water bottles, we can always refill them and constantly drink. And because you're fighting not just heat, but also altitude, and in some cases, you know, some very dry climates.
Well, and one of the ways that you advocate for having the opportunity for solitude or avoiding crowds is off-season travel. But it does also seem like that's another reason to use a guidebook like this, is to make sure that you don't, like you mentioned, try to drive through a pass that's closed or, you know, be unprepared. It does seem like off-season travel could also, you know, throw you some curveballs if you're not prepared.
Absolutely. And that's where the book comes in so handy, because you can really find out, okay, this is the season for this park, this is the season for this park, this is how I'm going to experience it. And in a lot of cases, especially with the mountain parks, those roads, you know, like Rocky Mountain Parks near you, Trail Ridge isn't open yet. It will be probably in the next, I just read an article, and then the next week or two, or at least by the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
But there are several other roads, like Tioga Pass here in Yosemite and going to the Sun Road and Glacier. That road may not make it until, you know, July sometime. So you do want to check those things out before you go.
Just two more questions. As a younger man, dunking my head in Crater Lake in Oregon was a rush and left me in awe of native Klamath boys visiting there on vision quests, right, for generations before the national
yeah.
park system made it easy, right? We just drove up and walked down, and it was no problem.
Yeah.
But I learned from your book that Klamath legends roughly parallel scientific explanations for Crater Lake's formation thousands of years ago. Are more national parks incorporating native perspectives in their educational efforts or working together with tribes at this point?
Yes, they are. Absolutely. And that so many of these national parks, that's the indigenous people that were here before John Muir showed up and found it,
right,
or Ansel
right.
Adams was taking photos. And that's just really important to recognize that history and get the connections there. And I just went 2 days ago here in Yosemite. I just went through the little village that, boy, it's a beautiful layout here. It's a village recreation that shows you what life was like here for the indigenous people that used to live here.
Last question for Becky Lomax, author of USA National Parks, The Complete Guide to All 59 Parks, just out the last few months. You've been to more than half of all of them, and you're in Yosemite Valley right now as we speak. Where
yes.
are you excited to go for the first time next? What's next for you that you haven't been to yet?
You know, I'm kind of embarrassed to say, but I've never been to Rocky Mountain. And I have a permit with my sister to go backpacking there in the end of August, early September. So I'll be down in that area hiking and backpacking and enjoying it.
Well, there you go. So just drink lots of water, okay?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Becky Lomax, like I said, just a marvelous accomplishment. This new book is, you know, it's a little daunting at first. When I first got it in the mail, I thought, oh, no, I'm not going to have time to read 700 pages before this interview. But as soon as you crack it open, it's a page turner. I mean, there's all these places I've realized, you know, I got to put on my bucket list. So I just really appreciate your work and the way that you've helped to share these beautiful places that, thanks to the Park Service, are being preserved for the most part, with new readers, with new audiences, and with people who, like my colleague Luke, have been there, but are happy to share, you know, to share the word with others. So congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you for your work. And thanks for speaking to Community Radio, KDNK.
Thank you so much. That was fun.